Obituary.
Obituary. William Anders. The Apollo 8 astronaut who captured Earthrise died on June 7th, age 90.
For a while, Bill Anders had high hopes of landing on the moon. He test-drove the lunar landing training vehicle, and as a keen amateur geologist, he wanted a closer look at those rocks. Yet the mission he actually went on, Apollo 8, was never intended to land there. It was originally an Earth orbit checkout of the lunar module, and when the module was delayed, NASA took the bold step of turning Apollo 8 into a manned reconnoitering flight round the moon. Human beings had never left Earth orbit before. Major Anders reckoned there was one chance in three they wouldn't come back, and two in three that the mission would be aborted. It wasn't, mostly because NASA wanted to get a spacecraft into lunar orbit before the commies did. He was sorry to fly without the lunar module, and as it turned out, pretty disappointed with the moon itself up close. Boring, stark, beat up, ugly were the words that sprang to mind. Forget the poetry. The first human view of the back of the moon was so intensely black that it put up the hairs on the back of his neck. The first lunar sunrise was interesting, with low, rugged mountains showing through a purplish haze, but beyond that, it looked like nothing so much as a grey, dirty beach. Nonetheless, they had to scan the terrain in detail for the moon landing that would follow. Frank Borman, the mission commander, had a camera mounted in his window that took a photo every 20 seconds. Jim Lovell, the navigator, made sextant sightings from the lower bay. He, Bill, at 35, the rookie on the flight, as well as the man who made sure that everything worked, was the designated photographer. Like the others, he had almost no training in that. They were all fighter pilots, and he was a nuclear engineer, a field he returned to when his space days were over. But the cameras and film were stowed on his side, and he shot from his right-hand window with his Hasselblad anything that looked useful. On their fourth lunar orbit, he was doing this as usual, his lens filled with shades of grey. Then, suddenly, as they rolled to go forward, he saw colour. It was shocking. Over the moon's horizon rose a delicate blue orb, shining and wreathed with white cloud. The day was Christmas Eve, and it looked like a Christmas tree ornament, one that could break just as easily. It was small, gorgeous, but almost insignificant. And it was home. He hadn't felt this emotional when they first left Earth, and he had looked back to photograph it glowing alone in space. Then it had looked like the classroom globe sitting on the teacher's desk. He had picked out Australia and lingered on America's west coast to see if he could spot San Diego, where he and the family lived. Cloud frustrated him. A bit less, and he could have pinpointed Washington State, where he partly grew up, with all the blackberries he could eat and all the garter snakes he could catch. It had been fun as well as amazing to see the Earth that way. Now what struck him was its beauty and fragility against the barren moon. "Oh, my God," he cried. "Look at that picture over there. There's the Earth coming up. Wow, is that pretty!" His window was the clearest. Leaking sealant had smeared the others. Immediately, though, Borman and Lovell saw it too. They yelled for cameras, and he floated them across, but their film was black and white. He needed colour and his telephoto lens. "Quick, quick, quick!" He asked Lovell to find a roll. "A colour exterior, anything, quick! Then find the right setting." They had no light meter in the craft. He had to guess it. Then, changing f-stops with every click, he just pointed the thing at the moon. He took three photographs. More would have been nice, but that was not on the flight plan. They were meant to be saving film for future lunar landing sites. Borman sent him and Lovell to their couches to sleep. He couldn't, though he tried. He just kept peeping out of his window at the Earth. On their telecast that evening, he read the first verse of Genesis, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, rang differently now. Back there, on that blue pearl, war was raging in Vietnam and riots were convulsing Europe. Missiles and rockets were raining down, forests were burning. Yet this beautiful little planet was all humanity had. It could not be fought over any more. From where he was, 240,000 miles out, the difference between Washington and Moscow could be spanned with his finger and thumb. No one got that message as overwhelmingly as the crew of Apollo 8. Fairly soon, however, thanks to his photographs, millions did. The next year, Earthrise appeared on American stamps. It ran in magazines and newspapers and was pinned as a poster on countless walls. And it changed the conversation. The modern environmental movement took off and grew. The picture made people think, even if it didn't make them think enough. It changed Bill Anders, too. He had gone into space a convinced Catholic, but now it made no sense that there was some supercomputer up there wondering whether Billy was a good boy yesterday. And what had the Pope to do with anything? That stuff he left aside. He also redoubled his efforts to take big-deal projects and Cold War politics out of space exploration. It should be done for science and human benefit, not for ruinous ideas like a manned mission to Mars. Rather than returning to space, though he was asked, he accepted the president's invitation to help make space policy. Those were his constant recommendations. He worked for GE for a time and went on to run General Dynamics, but he would not have minded going back to space. On the other hand, he was content to collect vintage aircraft and fish for salmon under the rainy Washington skies. His picture had brought him fame, and it was good to get away from that. One remark he had made seemed especially popular, though it was so poetical that it was hard to imagine he had said it. They had gone all the way to the moon to discover the Earth.